Hello, Merry Christmas. Hello,
can you hear me? Oh, there we go. Okay.
I said hello, Merry Christmas.
I said hello too, but I guess it didn't pick up. So, hello.
This is our Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays edition.
Yes.
As we return from being mysteriously gone for a month and a half.
Yeah, so we're fine. Everything's been fine. I guess
you could say that.
We took an unscheduled break because Allison's working, I'm a student, and we are still managing e-learning from our homes every day for our children. So things got a little crazy and
a little overwhelming, and we tried to stay on top of our lives and it just got to be a little bit too much, but we made it back in time for the holiday. Well, okay, we missed a majority of the holiday season, but
I know I had totally planned on doing like so many episodes, but I guess we'll just have to save them for next year.
Yeah, but we do have a fun episode planned for you for this year, or for this month, or for this week.
The remainder of the year.
See, I'm still struggling. Yeah, and then we're going to have a year-end review for next week.
That I'm looking forward to that one.
Because 2020 was horrific.
It was a shit show. I mean, let's not lie. And yeah, you saw it. It's kind of like, you know, how it's like, congratulations, you've reached Jumanji level whatever. And it's like, we're, what, 10 days away from a new year. And Kilauea erupted last in Hawaii.
Yes, because we're being good and we're pre-recording this a few days early just so we could have an episode in time.
Well, I mean, in all fairness, we usually do record our episodes ahead of time. Maybe you gathered that, maybe you haven't. But yes, we are 10 days away from new year, hopefully a better year. and volcanoes erupting.
And tonight we're supposed to see the Christmas star.
I'm not going to lie. I'm like super excited about that. But at the same time, I'm like secretly like, oh my gosh, this is just like a giant comet that's going to come and like destroy it.
Or it's like Jesus showing up tonight too. So I guess we'll know by the time this podcast airs.
Yeah, we'll see. But aren't you supposed to be able to see it for like more than just like tonight? Because it's supposed to rain like all night.
I know, it figures it happens like every...
like 800 years?
800 years, and it's going to rain for us, so why not?
I'm supposed to be able to see it, like, for the next couple nights, unless tonight is supposed to be, like, the brightest.
Well, I mean, it is, like, the Star of Bethlehem, and so I guess it makes sense that you only saw it on one night. Because if it, like, lasted, like, all month, would it have been really that special?
Yes. Potato, potato.
Oh, speaking of comets hitting the Earth, I just watched a really good movie yesterday that I don't even know. Because, like, movie theaters aren't really open anymore, at least where we're at in Washington, because like nothing is open.
Yeah.
But Greenland, have you heard of that movie?
Yeah, with Gerard Butler.
We watched it, rented it, whatever. That movie was actually really good.
Awesome. I saw it and I wasn't sure if it was worth it, because I'm kind of in this place where like it has to be really worth it for me to spend $20 to rent it for, like, a couple hours.
Yeah, but if you went to the movie theater, it costs, like, $50 to go see it in a movie theater.
Yeah.
Just remember that.
That's how I try and, like, justify it. Like, I don't think we have actually rented. We haven't rented, like, any in theater movies, I don't believe, since the whole, like, thing started. We've talked about it. I strongly considered Bill and Ted. I thought that would be worth it, but we didn't do it. Yeah. And but there's another movie with Vince Vaughn, and oh my gosh, I cannot remember the name, but did you ever see Happy Death Day?
No. Oh, I know what you're talking about, though.
I want to see that.
I do want to see that. It's like a take on Freaky Friday.
Yeah. And I even showed Tim the preview because I told him, I'm like, here's the deal. Like, I want to see this movie. I think it's great. It has Vince Vaughn in it. And Vince Vaughn is amazing. And I was like, but it's like $20 to rent it. So it's like, if you're not on board, then I'm not doing it. But he saw the preview and was laughing his ass off. So I think we might splurge and do that.
Well, I would definitely recommend Greenland. If you are going to splurge the $20 to rent a movie, it was really good. Like, I know that it's like the end of the world. Like, who wants to watch that right now? But they did a really good job. It was suspenseful. It was stressful. Because there are some movies where I'm kind of like, please, like, I've already been through that right now. Like, yeah. You know, you're kind of just like so over it. But this movie was done pretty well. I liked it.
Yeah.
It was stressful. Like, my heart was pounding, like, probably a good 4 times during that movie.
Oh, that's exciting.
I mean, my heart was pounding. Like, it was beating the whole time. But...
the caffeine, though.
Palpitations. Yeah, but it was pretty good. And who doesn't love Gerard Butler?
Oh, God, I know.
So anyway, that has nothing to do with our Christmas episode, but it does have to do with the end of the world. So
maybe we're there, maybe we're not, who knows, we'll see.
You never know. But anyway,
moving forward,
I should have saved that for our year-end review for next week, but you know.
Yeah.
Well, you're supporting small businesses. Why not support Hollywood? We all need a little something different to do inside our houses. So we both have creepy stories of our own that has kind of happened in the past, like, month and a half since we haven't been on. Do we want to say that for the end, or do we want to do that now?
I mean, whenever. I'm down with whatever.
We can save that for the end if you want, but I wasn't sure if you wanted to do that now.
No, I think we can save it. We'll see how long this goes.
Okay.
We'll see how long the stories end up being.
It'll be a teaser.
Yeah.
So, to get in the holiday spirit, we decided, okay, so yeah, we know that we're a podcast, so what is the most generic thing we could have done? We could have done, what is it, Grampus?
Krampus. The Krampus.
Krampus? 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 See, I don't even know, because we're not doing it, because that was the most, like, generic thing we could have done for our first year as a Christmas podcast. We decided to go old school and go with some traditional Christmas tales. But that being said, because we're going to actually read those stories, the verbiage and the language is going to be old school.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to just, like, bear with us, because we're going to actually read them from, like, their original literary writings.
And we've done that a few times before, and it's definitely fun. At least me, really. I don't understand what that means.
So get out your figgy pudding. Slip on your...
your nightcap.
Nightcap. Sit by your crackling fire. Turn down your electricity.
It's the old days. They don't have electricity.
Yeah. They have we'll turn it off.
Turn down the candlelight.
Turn off. Well, what I'm saying is turn off your electricity and light your gas candle.
Oh, okay. Whatever.
Pretend that we're not dealing with COVID and we're dealing with the...
the bubonic plague. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
The flu. Go back in time, like 100 years.
Yeah.
Because we are going to be telling you stories from the olden days.
Yeah.
To get in the Christmas holiday spirit. What's the name of your story that you're going to be telling?
So I am actually bouncing between two, but I think I'm going to go with Dark Christmas by Jeanette Winterson.
Okay, and I'm going to be reading you the story of Smee by A.M. Barrage.
Yeah.
And so you're in for a classic spooky Christmas edition of Why Are You So Scared?
Woo!
Dun, dun, dun! So, yes.
We don't have.
Because we're olden times. So, yeah, grab your Christmas cookies. Your glass of milk.
Maybe a cookie bomb.
Eggnog, rum, vodka. I don't know. Whatever.
Whatever
gets you by. It's 2020. You do you, boo. I know that I have a Starbucks peppermint mocha in my hand right now.
And I have a winter edition Arctic Berry Red Bull in my hand. It's amazing. It tastes like a Blue Jolly Rancher.
So we will get this party started.
Okay.
Would you like to go first?
Sure. I like my throat.
Uh-oh.
It's not the COVID. I don't go anywhere to get COVID.
Yeah.
Okay.
You've been stuck in your house since March.
Yeah.
It's not COVID.
Okay, so this is Dark Christmas by Jeanette Winterson. We had borrowed the house from a friend none of us seemed to know. High fallen house stood on an eminence overlooking the sea. It was a square Victorian gentleman's residence. The large bay windows looked down through the pines towards the shore. Thick stone steps led the visitor up to the double front door, which a Gothic bell pull released a loud, mournful clang deep in the distance of the house. Laurel lined the drive. The stable block was disused. The walled garden had been locked up in 1914 when the gardeners went to war. Only one had returned. I had been warned that the high brick wall enclosing the garden was unsafe. As I passed it slowly in the car, I saw a faded notice falling off the paint-peeled door. Do not enter. I was the first to arrive. My friends were following by train and I was to collect them the next day and then we would settle down to Christmas. I had driven from Bristol and I was tired. There was a Christmas tree roped on the top of my 4x4 and a trunkload of provisions. We were not near any town, but the housekeeper had left stacked wood to build a fire and I had brought a shepherd's pie and a bottle of Roya. Maybe you've heard of it. I haven't. So, yeah.
I don't know. Just keep going.
The kitchen... simple enough once I had got the fire going and the radio playing while I unpacked our festive food. Except my phone, no signal. Still, I knew the time of the train tomorrow and it was a relief to feel that the world had gone away. I put my food in the oven to heat it up, poured a glass of wine and went upstairs to clean myself a bedroom. The first landing had three bedrooms leading off it. It had a moth-eaten rug, a metal bed, and a mahogany chest of drawers. At the far end of the landing was a second set of stairs up to the attic floor. I am not romantic about maids' rooms or nurseries, and there was something about the second set of stairs that made me hesitate. The landing was bright in the sudden ray of the late sun on a winter's afternoon, but the light ended abruptly at the foot of the stairs, and so it couldn't go any further. I didn't want to be near the set of stairs, so I chose the room at the front of the house. As I went to bring up my bag, the house bell started to ring, its jerky metallic hammers sounding somewhere in the guts of the house. I was surprised but not alarmed. I expected the housekeeper. I opened the door and there was no one there.
I went down the steps and looked around. I admit I was frightened. The night was clear and soundless. There was no car in the distance, no footsteps walking away. Determined to conquer my fear, I walked around a little, and then turning back to the house, I saw it. The bell wire ran along the side of the house under a sheltering gutter. Perhaps 30 or 40 bats were dangling upside down in the vibrating wire. The same number swooped and swerved in a dark mass. Obviously, the movement on the wire had set off the bell. I like bats. Clever bats. Good. Now supper. I ate. I drank. I wondered why love is so hard and life is so short. I went to bed. The room was warm now and I was ready to sleep. The sound of the sea added into the flow of my dreams. I woke from a dead sleep in the dead darkness to hear. What? What can I hear? It sounded like a ball bearing or a marble rolling on the bare floor above my head. It rolled hard on hard, then hit the wall. Then it rolled again in the other direction. This might not have mattered, except that the other direction was upwards. Things can come loose and roll downwards, but they cannot come loose and roll upwards. Unless someone... That thought was so unwelcome that I dismissed it along with the law of gravity. Whatever was rolling over my head must be a natural dislodging. The house was draughty and unused. The attics were under the eaves where any kind of weather might get in. Whether animals remember the bats, I pulled the covers up to my eyebrows and pretended not to look at them. There it was again, hard on hit, on pause, on roll. I waited for sleep, waiting for daylight. We are lucky, even the worst of us, because daylight comes. It was a brooding day, the 21st of December, the shortest day of the year. Coffee, coat on, car keys. Shouldn't I check the attic? The second set of stairs was narrow, a servant staircase. It led to a lathe and plaster corridor, barely a shoulder width wide. I started coughing. Breathing was difficult. Damp had dropped the plaster in thick, crumbling heaps on the floorboards. As below, there were three doors. Two were closed. The door to the room above my room was ajar. I made myself go forward. The room was under the eaves, as I had guessed. The floor was rough. There was no bed, only a washstand and a clothes rail. What surprised me was the nativity scene in the corner. Standing about 2 feet tall, it was more like a doll's house than a Christmas decoration. Inside the open-fronted stable stood the animals, the shepherds, the crib, Joseph. Above the roof on a bit of wire was a battered star. It was old, handmade in a workmanlike but not craftsmanlike sort of way. The painted wood now rubbed and faded like pigments of time. I thought I would carry it downstairs and put it by our Christmas tree. It must have been made for the children when there were children here. I stuffed my pockets with the figures and animals, and I left quickly, leaving the door open. I had to set off for the station. Stephen and Susie could help me with the rest later. As soon as I was out of the house, my lungs felt clear again. It must be the plaster dust. The drive to the station was along the coast road. Lonely and unyielding, the road turned in a series of blind bends and tight corners. I met no one and I saw no one. Gulls circled over the sea. The station itself was a simple shelter on a long single track. There were no information boards. I checked my phone, no signal. At last, the train appeared distantly down the track. I was excited. Memories of visiting my father as a child when he was stationed at his RAF base gave me a rush of pleasure whenever I traveled by train or come to meet one. The train slowed and halted. The guard stood down for a moment. I watched the doors. It wasn't a big train, this branch line train, but none of the doors opened. I waved at the guard who came over. I am meeting my friends. He shook his head. Train's empty. Next stop is end of the line. I was confused. Had they gotten off at an earlier stop? I described them. The guard shook his head again. I noticed strangers. They would have boarded at Carlisle. Ask me where to get off. Always do. Is there another train before tomorrow? One a day and that's your lot. And more than anybody needs in a place like this. Where are you staying? High Fallen House. Do you know it? Oh, aye. We all know it. He looked as if he were about to say something else instead. He blew his whistle.
The empty train pulled away, leaving me staring down the long track, watching the red light like a warning. I needed to get a signal on my phone. I drove on past the station, following the steep hill, hoping some height would connect me to the rest of the world. At the top of the hill, I stopped the car and got out, pulling up the collar of my coat. The first snow hit my face with insect insistence, sharp and spiteful like little bites. We looked out across the lightning bay. That must be High Fallen House. But what's that? Two figures walking on the beach. Is it Steven and Susie? Had they driven here after all? Then as I strained my eyes against the deceit of distance, I realized that the second figure was much smaller than the first. They were walking purposefully toward the house. When I arrived back, it was nearly dark. I put on the light, blew the fire into a blaze. There was no sign of the mysterious couple I had seen from the hill. Perhaps it had been the housekeeper and her daughter come to make sure that everything was all right. I had a telephone number for Mrs. Wormwood, but without a signal, I couldn't call her. The snow was thickening in windy swirls. Relax. Have a whiskey. I leaned on the warm kitchen range with my whiskey in my hand. The wooden figures I had brought down from the attic were lying on the kitchen table. I should go up and get this table. I don't want to. I bounded up the first set of stairs, using energy to force out unease. At my bedroom, I put on the light. That felt better. The second set of stairs stood in shadows at the end of a long landing. I felt that constriction in my lungs again. Why am I holding onto the handrail like an old man? I could see that the only light to the attic was at the top of the stairs. I found the round brown bakelite switch. I flicked down the nipple. A single bulb lit up reluctantly. The room was straight ahead. The door was closed. Hadn't I left it open? I turned the handle and stood in the doorway, the room dimly lit by the light from the stairs. Washstand, nativity, clothes rail. On the clothes rail was a child's dress. I hadn't noticed that before. I suppose I had been in a hurry, pushing aside my misgivings. I went in purposefully and bent down to pick up the wooden nativity. It was heavy, and I had just got it secure in my arms when the light on the landing went out. Hello? Who's there? There's someone breathing like they can barely breathe, not faint, struggling for breath. I mustn't turn around because whoever or whatever it is behind me.
Cue the cat fight.
I stood still for a minute, steadying my nerve, and then I shuffled forward towards the edge of light coming up from downstairs. At the doorway, I heard a step behind me. Lost my balance and put out a hand to steady myself. My hand gripped something wet, the clothes rail. It must be the dress. My heart was overbeating. Don't panic. Bakelite, bad wiring, strange house, darkness, aloneness. But you're not alone, are you? Back in the kitchen with whiskey, Radio 4, and pasta boiling, I examined the dress. It was for a small child, and it was hand-knitted. The wool was smelly and sopping. I washed it out and I let it hang over the sink to drip. I guess there must be a hole in the roof and the dress had been soaking up the rain for a long time. I ate my supper, tried to read, told myself it had been nothing, nothing at all. It was only 8 p.m. I didn't want to go to bed, though the snow outside was like a quilt. I decided to arrange the nativity, donkey, sheep, camels, wise men, shepherds, star, Joseph, the crib that was there, but it was empty. There was no Christ child, and there was no Mary. Had I dropped them in the dark room? I hadn't heard anything fall, and those wooden figures were 6 inches tall. Joseph was wearing a woolen tunic, but his wooden legs had painted putties. I pulled off the tunic. Underneath, wooden Joseph wore a painted uniform. First World War. When I turned him around, I saw that there was a gash in his back like a stab wound. My phone beeped. I dropped Joseph, grabbed the phone. It was a text message from Susie. Trying to call you. Leave tomorrow. I pressed call. Nothing. I tried to send a text. Nothing. But what did it matter? Suddenly I felt relief and calm. They had been delayed. That was all. Tomorrow they would be here. I sat down again with the nativity. Perhaps the missing figures were inside. I put in my hand. My fingers closed around a metal object. It was a small iron key with a hoop top. Maybe it was a key to the attic door. Outside, snow had fallen, snow on snow. The sky had cleared. The moon sped above the sea. I had gone to bed, and I was deep asleep when I heard it clearly. Above me, footsteps, pacing. Down the room, hesitate, turn, return. I lay in bed, eyes staring blindly at the ceiling. Why do we open our eyes when we can't see anything? And what was there to see? I don't believe in ghosts. I wanted to put on the light, but what if the light didn't come on? Why would it be worse to be in darkness? I had not chosen the darkness I was choosing, but it would be worse. I sat up in bed and I pulled back the curtain a little. The moon had been so bright tonight, surely there would be light. There was light. Outside the house, hand in hand, stood the still and silent figures of a mother and a child. I did not sleep again until daylight, and when I slept and woke again, it was almost midday, and already the light was lowering. Hurrying to get coffee, I saw that the dress was gone. I had left dripping over the sink. Get out of the house. I set off to the station. There was an air frost that had coated the trees in glittering white. It was beautiful and deathly. The world held in ice. On the road, there were no car tracks, no noise but the roar and the drop of the sea. I moved slowly and saw no one. In the white, unmoving landscape, I wondered if there was anyone else left alive. At the station, I waited. I waited some time past the time until the train whistled on the track. The train stopped. The guard got down and saw me. He shook his head. "There's no one," he said. "No one at all." I thought I would cry. I took out my mute phone. I flashed at the message trying to call. "Leave tomorrow." The guard looked at it. "Happen it's you who should be leaving," he said. "There's no more trains past Carlisle now till the 27th. Tomorrow was the last and that's been canceled. Weather." I wrote down a number and I gave it to the guard. "Will you phone my friends and tell them I'm on my way home?" On the slow journey back to High Fallen House, I filled my mind with my departure. It would be slow and dangerous to travel at night, but I could not consider another night alone, or not alone. All I had to do was manage 40 miles to Inchmarn. There was a pub and a guest house and a remote but normal life. The text message kept playing in my head. Had it really meant that I should leave? And why? Because Susie and Stephen couldn't come? Weather? Illness? It's all a guessing game. The fact is, I have to go. The house seemed subdued when I returned. I had left the lights on and I went straight upstairs to pack my bag. At once, I saw the light in the attic was on. I paused, breathed. Of course it's on. I never switched it off. That proves it's a wiring fault. I must tell the housekeeper. My bag packed, I threw the food into a box and put everything back in the car. I had the whiskey in the front, a blanket I stole from the bed, and I made a hot water bottle, just in case. It was only 5 o'clock. At work, we'd be in Inchbarn by 9 p.m. I got in the car and I turned the key. The radio came on for a second, died, and as the ignition clicked and clicked, I knew that the battery was flat. 2 hours ago at the station, the car had started first time. Even if I had left the lights on, but I hadn't. I hadn't left the lights on. A cold panic hit me. I took a swig of the whiskey. I couldn't sleep in the car all night. I would die. I don't want to die. Back in the house, I wondered what I was going to do all night. I must not fall asleep. I had noticed some old books and volumes when I had explored downstairs yesterday. Assorted dusty adventure stories and tales of empire. As I sorted through them, I came across a faded velvet photograph album. In the cold, deserted sitting room, I began to discover the past. High Fallen House, 1910. The women in long skirts and with miraculous waists. The men in shooting tweeds. The stable boys in waistcoats and gardening boys wearing flat caps. The maids in starched aprons, and here they are again in their Sunday best. A wedding photograph, Joseph and Mary Locke, 1912. He was a gardener, she was a maid. In the back of the album, loose and unsorted, were further photographs and newspaper cuttings. 1914, the men in uniform. there was Joseph. I took the album back into the kitchen and put it next to my wooden soldier. I had on my coat and my scarf. I propped myself up in two chairs by the wood-fired range, and I dozed and waited and waited and dozed. It was perhaps 2 a.m. when I heard a child crying. Not a child who was with a scraped knee or a lost toy, but an abandoned child. A child whose own voice is his last hold on life. A child who cries and knows that no one will come. The sound was not above me. It was above the above me. I knew where it was coming from. I put my hands over my ears and my head between my knees. I could not shut out the sound. A locked up child, a hungry child, a child who was cold and wet and frightened. Twice I got up and I went to the door. Twice I sat down again. The crying stopped. Silence. A dreadful silence. I raised my head. Footsteps were coming down the stairs. Not one foot in front of the other, but one foot dragging slightly. Then the other joining it, steadying, stepping again. At the bottom of the stairs, the footsteps paused. Then they did what I knew that they would do with all of the terror in my body. The footsteps came towards the kitchen door. Whatever was out there was standing 12 feet away on the other side of the door. I stood behind the table and I picked up a knife. The door swung open with a violent force that rammed the brass doorknob into the plaster of the walls. Wind and snow blew into the kitchen, whirling up the photographs and cuttings on the table. I saw that the front door itself was wide open, the entrance hall like a wind tunnel. Holding the knife, I went forward into the hall to shut the door. The pendant metal lantern hung from the ceiling was swinging wildly on its long chain. A sudden gust lurched it forward like a child swinging, pushed too high. It fell back at first against the large semicircular fanlight over the front door. The fanlight shattered and fell around. My shoulders and stars flicker, buzz, darkness. The house lights were out. No wind now. No cries. Silence again. Glass hit in the snow-lit hall. I walked out of the front door and into the night. At the drive, I turned left and saw them, the mother and child. The child was wearing the woolen dress. She had no shoes. She held up her arms piteously to her mother, who stood like stone. I ran forward. I grabbed the child in my arms. There was no child. I had fallen face down in the snow. Help me. That's not my voice. I'm on my feet again. The mother is ahead of me. I follow her. She's going toward the walled garden. She seems to pass through the door, leaving me on the other side. Do not enter. I tried the rusty hoop handle. It broke off, taking a piece of door with it. I kicked the door open. It fell off its hinges. The ruined and abandoned garden lay before me, a walled garden of 1 acre used to feed 20 people, but that was a long time ago. There were footprints in the snow. I followed them. They led me to the bothy, its roof patched with corrugated iron. There was no door, but the inside seemed dry and sound. There was a tear-off calendar still on the wall, 22nd December 1916. I put my hand in my pocket and I realized that the key from the nativity was there. At the same time, I heard a chair scrape in the floor in the room beyond. I had no fear anymore. As the body first shivers and then numbs with cold, my feelings were frozen. It was moving through shadows as one who dreams. In the room beyond, there was a low fire lit in the tiny, tiny fireplace. On either side of the fire sat the mother and child. The child was absorbed playing with a marble. Her bare feet were blue, but she didn't seem to feel the cold any more than I did. Are we dead then? The woman with the shawl over her head looked at me with deep, expressionless eyes. I recognized her. It was Mary Locke. She nodded at me, or not me, at some other me in some other time. I do not know. Her gaze went on to a tall cupboard. I knew that my key fit the cupboard and that I must open it. I did so. A dusty uniform fell out, crumpling like a puppet. The uniform was not quite empty of its occupant. The back of the faded wool jacket had a long slash where the lungs would have been. I looked at the knife in my hand. Open the door. Are you in there? Open the door. I woke to blinding white. Where am I? Something's rocking. It's the car. I'm in my car. A heavy glove was brushing off the snow. I sat up. I found my keys, pressed the unlock button. It was morning. Outside was the guard from the train and the woman who announced herself as Mrs. Wormwood. Fine mess you've made here, she said. We went into the kitchen. I was shivering so much that Mrs. Wormwood relented and began to make coffee. Alfie fetched me, she said, after he spoke to your friends. There's a body, I said, in the walled garden. Is that where it is? Said Mrs. Wormwood. At Christmas 1914, Joseph Locke had gone to war. Before he left for Flanders, he made a nativity scene for his little girl. When he came back in 1916, he had been gassed. They heard him climbing the stairs, gasping for breath through froth-corrupted lungs. His mind had gone, they said. At night in the attic where he slept with his wife and child, he leaned vacantly against the wall, rolling the child's marbles up and down, down and up, pacing, pacing, pacing. One night just before Christmas, he strangled his wife and daughter. He left them for dead in the bed and went out. But his wife was not dead. She followed him. In the morning, they found her sitting by the nativity, her dress dark with blood, his finger marks livid at her throat. She was singing a lullaby and pushing the point of a knife into the back of the wooden figure. Joseph was never found. Are you going to call the police? I said. What for? Said Mrs. Wormwood. Let the dead bury the dead. Alfie the guard went out to see my car. It started first time. The exhaust blew in the white air. I left them clearing up and about to set off when I remembered I had left my radio in the kitchen. I went back inside. The kitchen was empty. I could hear the two of them up in the attic. I picked up the radio. The nativity was on the table as I had left it, but it wasn't as I had left it. Joseph was there, and the animals, and the shepherds, and the worn-out star. And the center was the crib. Next to the crib were the wooden figures of the mother and child.
Finn.
I added the Finn, boom. P.S., by the way.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, he just started doing me that halfway through that story.
Because I was excited because today I get to go to
Greece. Ooh, what are you going to do there?
I'm not sure yet, but I get to spend the night.
Oh my goodness, how much fun.
One of the things I do know what I'm going to do, though, is play with gravel.
Mom's having the gravel delivered tomorrow, so she thought Riker would enjoy watching it.
Oh,
thank you for sharing. You know, we're recording our podcast right now.
And everybody in the room.
Okay.
I'm watching it.
That you have eye boogers?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Well, that's interesting that she found out all that happened in that house.
I feel like I liked it because it was spooky and just that, like, the idea of being alone and, like, trapped in the snow and, like, you're expecting people to come. But, like, I am kind of sad that it was like, well, what delayed the friends? Like, why weren't they there? And, like, I don't know. There's just that kind of was, like, a letdown. I was kind of expecting a little bit more of, like, the others kind of situation. But still, it was a good story. Yeah. I liked it.
And we never found out what happened to the friends, right?
Yeah, we never found out. Like, did they miss the train? Were they sick? Did they decide to, like, bail on her? Like, where are they? Riker says they're dead. Who knows?
They're dead.
They're dead. Okay.
And now the zombies.
Okay. Yeah. So there's that.
There you have it.
Yeah.
The marble thing was weird, to have the marble rolling uphill. That part kind of stuck with me a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that just sounds like it would be super creepy to, like, hear it. Because I feel like there's a little more oomph, like, when you're rolling a marble up, because you have to give it, like, the whatever to go up. So, like, that just sounds, yeah, unless you push it. It just sounds creepy, like, in the middle of the night, to that, like, above you, like, or anywhere near you, when you know you're alone. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. So let me take a swig of my coffee here. A swig.
Okay.
And then I will tell you the story of Smee.
Okay.
So your story was more present day, but the situation, the sitch happened in 1914, but your story was, like, written, like, more recently.
Yeah. Like, that's the one thing I also wanted to know, like, how recent, because, like, they talked about, like, cell phones and stuff like that, but kind of, like,
yeah, my story was actually written in 1931. So it's going to be, okay. Like, the language is going to be a little hard for me. Maybe it won't be too hard. But when I originally heard it, it was, but we'll see. I might be able to power through.
Okay. Awesome.
Okay, so this is the story of Smee. No, said Jackson with a shy little smile. I'm sorry, I won't play hide and seek. It was Christmas Eve, and there were 14 of us in the house. We had had a good dinner, and we were all in a good mood for fun and games. All that is, except Jackson. When somebody suggested hide and seek, there were loud shouts of agreement. Jackson's refusal was the only one. It was not like Jackson to refuse to play a game. Aren't you? Someone asked. I'm perfectly all right, thank you, he said, but he added with a smile that softened his refusal, but did not change it. I'm still not playing hide and seek. Why not? Someone asked. He hesitated for a moment before replying. I sometimes go and stay at a house where a girl was killed. She was playing hide and seek in the dark. She didn't know the house very well. There was a door that led to the servant's staircase. And when she was chased, she thought the door led to a bedroom. She opened the door and jumped and landed at the bottom of the stairs. And she broke her neck, of course. We all looked serious. Mrs. Fernley said, how terrible. And were you there when it happened? Jackson shook his head sadly. No, he said. But I was there when something else happened. Something worse. What could be worse than that? This was, said Jackson. He hesitated for a moment, then he said, I wonder if any of you have ever played a game called Smee. It's much better than hide and seek. The name comes from, it's me, of course. Perhaps you'd like to play it instead of hide and seek. Let me tell you the rules of the game. Every player is given a sheet of paper. All the sheets except one are blank. On the last sheet of paper is written Smee. Nobody knows who Smee is except Smee himself or herself. You turn out the lights and Smee goes quietly out of the rooms and hides. After a time, the others go off to search for Smee. But of course they don't know who they are looking for. When one player meets another, he challenges him by saying Smee, and the other player answers Smee. And they continue searching. But the real Smee doesn't answer when someone challenges. The second player stays quietly beside him. Presently, it will be discovered by a third player. He will challenge and receive no answer, and he will join the first two. This goes on until all the players are in the same place. The last one to find Smee has to pay a forfeit. It's a good, noisy, amusing game. In a big house, it often takes a long time for everyone to find Smee. Perhaps you'd like to try. I'll happily pay my forfeit and sit here by the fire while you play. It sounds like a good game, I remarked. Have you played it too, Jackson? Yes, he answered. I played it in the house that I was telling you about. And she was there? The girl who broke? No, no, said someone else. He told us he wasn't there when she broke her neck. Jackson thought for a moment. I don't know if she was there or not. I'm afraid she was. I know that there were 13 of us playing the game, and there were only 12 people in the house. I didn't know the dead girl's name. When I heard that whispered name in the dark, it didn't worry me. But I tell you, I'm never going to play that kind of game again. It made me quite nervous for a long time. I prefer to pay my forfeit at once. We all stared at him. His words did not make sense at all. Tim Vaus was the kindest man in the world. He smiled at us all. This sounds like an interesting story, he said. Come on, Jackson, you can tell it to us instead of paying a forfeit. Very well, said Jackson. Here is the story. Have you met the Sangstons? They are cousins of mine and they live in Surrey. 5 years ago, they invited me to go and spend Christmas with them. It was an old house with lots of unnecessary passages and staircases. A stranger could get lost in quite easily. Well, I went down for Christmas. Violet Sangston promised me that I knew most of the other guests. Unfortunately, I couldn't get away from my job until Christmas Eve. All the other guests had arrived there the previous day. I was the last to arrive, and I was only just in time for dinner. I said hello to everyone I knew and Violet Sangston, people I didn't know. Then it was time to go in for dinner. This is perhaps why I didn't hear the name of a tall, dark-haired, handsome girl whom I hadn't met before. Everyone was in rather a hurry, and I always had at catching people's name. I was always bad at catching people's names. She looked cold and clever. She didn't look at all friendly, but she looked interesting, and I wondered who she was. I didn't ask because I was sure that someone would speak to her by name during the meal. Unluckily, however, I was a long way from her at the table. I was sitting next to Mrs. Gorman, and as usual, Mrs. Gorman was being very bright and amusing. Her conversation is always worth listening to, and I completely forgot to ask the name of the dark, proud girl. There were 12 of us, including the Sangstons themselves. We were all young, or trying to be young. Jack and Violet Sangston were the oldest, and their 17-year-old son, Reggie, was the youngest. It was Reggie who suggested Smee. When the talk turned to games, he told us the rules of the game, just as I've described them to you. Jack Sangston warned us all, if you're going to play games in the dark, he said, please be careful of the back stairs on the first floor. A door leads to them, and I've often thought about taking the door off. In the dark, a stranger to the house could think they were walking into a room. A girl really did break her neck on those stairs. I asked how it happened. It was about 10 years ago before we came here. There was a party and they were playing hide and seek. This girl was looking for somewhere to hide. She heard somebody coming and ran along the passage to get away. She opened the door, thinking it led to the bedroom, and she planned to hide in there until the seeker had gone. Unfortunately, it was the door that led to the back stairs, and she fell straight down to the bottom of the stairs. She was dead when they picked her up. We all promised to be careful. Mrs. Gorman even made a little joke about living to be 90. You see, none of us had known the poor girl, and we did not want to feel sad on Christmas Eve. Well, we all started the game immediately after dinner. Young Reggie Sangston ran, making sure all the lights were off except the ones in the servants' rooms. And in the sitting room where we were,
We then prepped 12 sheets of paper. 11 of them were blank, and one of them had Smee written on it. Reggie mixed them all up. When we each took, the person who got the paper with Smee on it had to hide. I looked at mine and saw that it was blank. A moment later, all the electric lights went out. In the darkness, I heard someone moving very quietly to the door. After a minute, somebody blew a whistle and we all rushed to the door. I had no idea who was Smee. For 5 or 10 minutes, we were all rushing up and down passages, in and out of rooms, challenging each other and answering, "Smee? Smee?" After a while, the noise died down and I guessed that someone had found Smee. After a time, I found a group of people all sitting on some narrow stairs. I challenged and received no answer, so Smee was there. I hurriedly joined the group. Presently, two more players arrived. Each one was hurrying to avoid being last. Jack Sangston was last and was given the forfeit. "I think we're all here now, aren't we?" he remarked. He lit a match, looked up the staircase, and began to count. 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, he said, then laughed. "That's silly. There's one too many." The match went out, and he lit another and began to count. He got as far as 12, then he looked puzzled. "There are 13 people here," he said. "I haven't counted myself yet." "Oh, nonsense," I laughed. "You probably began with yourself, and now you want to count yourself twice." His son looked out his electric, took out his electric torch. It gave a better light than the matches, and we all began to count. "Of course, there were 12 of us," Jack laughed. "Well," he said, "I was sure I counted 13 twice." From halfway up the stairs, Violet Sangston spoke nervously. "I thought there was somebody sitting two steps above me. Have you moved, Captain Ransom?" The captain said that he hadn't, but I thought there was somebody sitting between Mrs. Sangston and me. Just for a moment, there was an uncomfortable something in the air. A cold finger seemed to touch us all. For the moment, we all felt that something odd and unpleasant had just happened and was likely to happen again. Then we laughed at ourselves and at each other, and we felt normal again. There were only 12 of us, and that was that. Still laughing, we marched back to the sitting room to begin again. This time, I was me. Violet Sangston found me while I was searching for a hiding place. That game didn't last long. Soon there were 12 people and the game was over. Violet felt cold and wanted her jacket. Her husband went up to their bedroom to fetch it. As soon as he'd gone, Reggie touched him on the arm. He was looking pale and sick. "Quick," he whispered, "I've got to talk to you. Something horrible has just happened." We went into the breakfast room. "What's the matter?" I asked. "I don't know. You were Smee last time, weren't you?" "Well, of course I didn't know who Smee was. While Mother and the others ran to the west side of the house and found you, I went east. There's deep clothes cupboard in my bedroom. It looked like a good hiding place, and I thought that perhaps Smee might be there. I opened the door in the dark and touched somebody's hand." "Smee?" I whispered. There was no answer. I thought I had found Smee. "Well, I don't understand it, but I suddenly had a strange cold feeling. I can't describe it, but I felt that something was wrong. So I turned on my electric torch, and there was nobody there. Now I am sure I touched a hand, and nobody could get out of the cupboard because I was standing in the doorway. What do you think?" "You imagine that you touched a hand," I said. He gave a short laugh. "I knew you would say that," he said. "Of course I imagined. That's the only explanation, isn't it?" I agreed with him. I could see that he still felt shaken. Together we returned to the sitting room for another game of Smee. The others were all ready and waiting to start again. Perhaps it was my imagination, although I'm almost sure that it was not. But I had a feeling that nobody was really enjoying the game anymore. But everyone was too polite to mention it. All the same, I had the feeling that something was wrong. All the fun had gone out of the game. Something deep inside me was trying to warn me. "Take care," it whispered, "take care." There was some unnatural, unhealthy influence at work in the house. Why did I have this feeling? Because Jack Sangston had counted 13 people instead of 12? Because his son imagined he had touched someone's hand in an empty cupboard? I tried to laugh at myself, but I did not succeed. Well, we started again while we were all chasing the unknown. Smee, we were all as noisy as ever, but it seemed to me that most of us were just acting. We were no longer enjoying the game. At first, I stayed with the others, but for several minutes, no Smee was found. I left the main group and started searching on the first floor, the west side of the house. And there, while I was feeling my way along, I bumped into a pair of... I put my hand and touched a soft, heavy curtain. Then I knew there I was. Where I was. There was tall, deep windows with window seats at the end of the passage. The curtains reached to the ground. Somebody was sitting in the corner of one of the window seats behind a curtain. Aha! I thought I've caught Smee, so I pulled the curtain to one side and touched a woman's arm. It was a dark, moonless night outside. I couldn't see the woman sitting in the corner of the window seat. Smee, I whispered. There was no answer. When Smee is challenged, he or she does not answer. So I sat down beside her to wait for the others, and I whispered, "What's your name?" And out of the darkness beside me, the whisper came, "Brenda Ford." I did not guess at once who she was. I knew every girl in the house by name except one, and that was a tall, pale, dark girl. So here she was sitting beside me on the window seat, shut in between a heavy curtain and a window. I was beginning to enjoy the game. I wondered if she was enjoying it too. I whispered one or two rather ordinary questions to her and received no answer. Smee is a game of silence. It is a rule of the game that Smee and the person or persons who have found Smee have to keep quiet. This, of course, makes it harder for the others to find them, but there was nobody else about. I wondered, therefore, why she was insisting on silence. I spoke again and caught no answer. I began to feel a little annoyed. Perhaps she is one of those cold, clever girls who have a poor opinion of all men. I thought, she doesn't like me, and she's using the rules of the game as an excuse for not speaking. Well, if she doesn't like sitting here with me, I certainly don't want to sit with her. I turned away from her. I hope someone finds us soon, I thought. As I sat there, I realized that I disliked sitting beside this girl very much indeed. That was strange. The girl I had seen at dinner had seemed likable in a cold kind of way. I noticed her and wanted to know more about her, but now I felt really uncomfortable beside her. The feeling of something wrong, something unnatural, was growing. I remember touching her arm and I trembled with horror. I wanted to jump up and run away. I prayed that someone else would come along soon. Just then, I heard light footsteps in the passage. Somebody on the other side of the curtain brushed against my knee. The curtain moved to one side, and a woman's hand touched my shoulder. "Smee," whispered a voice that I recognized at once. It was Mrs. Gorman. Of course, she received no answer. She came and sat down beside me, and at once I felt very much better. "It's Tony Jackson, isn't it?" she whispered. "Yes," I whispered back. "You're not Smee, are you?" "No, she's on my other side." She reached out across me. I heard her fingernails scratch a woman's silk dress. "Hello, Smee. How are you? Who are you?" "Oh, is it against the rules to talk? Never mind. Tony. We'll break the rules. Do you know, Tony, this game is beginning to annoy me a little. I hope they aren't going to play it all evening. I'd like to play a nice, quiet game all together beside a warm fire." "Me too," I agreed. "Can't you suggest something to them? There's something rather unhealthy about this particular game. I'm sure I'm being very silly, but I can't get rid of the idea that we've got an extra player, somebody who ought not to be here at all." That was exactly how I felt, but I didn't say so. However, I felt very much better. Mrs. Gorman's arrival had chased away my fears. We sat talking. "I wonder when the others will find us," said Mrs. Gorman. After a time, we heard the sound of feet and young Reggie's voice shouting, "Hello? Hello, is anybody there?" "Yes," I answered. "Is Mrs. Gorman with you?" "Yes. What happened to you? You both got forfeits. We've all been waiting for you for hours." "But you haven't found Smee yet," I complained. "You haven't? You mean I was Smee this time?" "But Smee is here with us," I cried. "Yes," agreed Miss Gorman. The curtain was pulled back and we sat looking into the eyes of Reggie's electric torch. I looked at Miss Gorman, and then on my other side, between me and the wall, was an empty space on the window seat. I stood up at once, then I sat down again. I was feeling very sick, and the world seemed to be going round and round. "There was somebody there," I insisted, "because I touched her." "So did I," said Mrs. Gorman in a trembling voice. "I don't think anyone could leave this window seat without us knowing." Reggie gave a shaky little laugh. I remembered his unpleasant experience earlier that evening. "Someone's being playing jokes," he said. "Are you coming down?" We were not very popular when we came down to the sitting room. "I found the two of them sitting behind a curtain on a window seat," said Reggie. I went up to the tall, dark girl. "So you pretend to be Smee and then went away?" I accused her. She shook her head. Afterwards, we all played cards in the sitting room, and I was very glad. Sometime later, Jack Singston wanted to talk to me. I could see that he was rather cross with me, and soon he told me the reason. Tony, he said, I suppose you are in love with Mrs. Gorman. That's your business, but please don't make love to her in my house during a game. You kept everyone waiting. It was very rude of you, and I'm ashamed of you. But we were not alone. I protested. There was somebody else here, somebody who was pretending to be Smee. I believe it was a tall, dark girl, Mrs. Ford. She whispered her name to me. Of course, she refused a minute afterwards. Jack Singston stared at me. Miss who? He breathed. Brenda Ford, she said. Jack put a hand on my shoulder. Look here, Tony, he said. I don't mind a joke, but enough is enough. We don't want to worry the ladies. Brenda Ford is the name of the girl who broke her neck on the stairs. She was playing hide and seek here 10 years ago.
I liked that one.
So I will admit the whole game of Smee is really confusing. Like, I'm so like, okay, kind of don't get like the story. Like, are you supposed to say anything if you're Smee, or do you not say something if you're Smee? Like, I don't know. I'm still confused.
I thought you weren't supposed to say anything if you were Smee, you had to be quiet.
It's so creepy to me thinking about playing like hide and go seek, like in the dark. And you just randomly have to like go feel around like for people, and that's how you find them.
Yeah.
And then like, and then just to think that you're playing hide and go seek with a ghost, or even if you're just not playing hide and go seek with a ghost, but that there's just someone playing hide and go seek with you that should not be playing hide and go seek with you is creepy to me.
Yeah.
And then just like, there have been other stories that I think that we have talked about, or other stories that I've read where people are playing like hide and go seek in like a creepy house or in the woods or in a cemetery. And then they are like counting how many people there are. And there's always like that extra person that wasn't. And that has always just been that simple story. That just like spooks you in the end, because it's like, oh yeah, we've got all our people, but who's this extra person? Because you're always expecting someone to be missing.
Yeah.
You know, in a scary story, you're not expecting to gain somebody. So it's like, who is this extra person? Where did they come from? So I think I had found the updated version, because the original one has like a lot of the lingo from like Charles Dickens, where it's like, so I'm glad I found like a more updated version of that story, because it flowed a lot easier for me.
Right.
But yeah. I just like that story. I like that story a lot, because it's just so like simple and just in that. And like, they think that they've been sitting by that window for a while, but actually like hours have passed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's so crazy.
And this poor girl who had been like playing hide and go seek, it's like she's destined to play hide and go seek.
Could you imagine, like, that's your afterlife, is just playing hide and go seek?
I'm scaring the crap out of people for the rest of your life.
I mean, I wouldn't mind scaring the crap out of people, depending on who it was.
But I mean, like, seriously, like, how long are people going to be playing hide and go seek for?
Yeah.
Years. I mean, at some point, it's probably get old. Just saying.
Yeah, for sure. I agree.
But you never know. I mean, Riker might be playing it for years.
Possibly.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I'm looking at him hitting himself in the head with a jar of marshmallow puff. So.
From Harry Potter, Dobby.
He thinks he's Dobby, so he'll probably always be playing.
Well, I'm glad that you like the story that I found for us.
Yeah.
Okay, that one
has I notes. Did. Thank you for sharing.
Okay, so you said that you had a few creepy things to share.
So, I guess it's maybe not, like, super creepy. I don't know. It actually kind of skeeved me out last night. So, last night, for some weird, strange reason, I could not sleep. Like, I was up at 12:24, and I didn't go back to bed until closer to 6 this morning. But I'm, like, laying there, right? And I have this, like, terrible habit of getting on my phone. And I know that, like, if you're struggling sleeping, you're not supposed to get on your phone because, like, the light can really affect your sleep.
Right.
So, I always kind of do this thing where it's like I scroll through my phone until I feel like I'm tired enough that I could potentially go back to
sleep. Right.
So I'm sitting here and I finally get to that point where it's like, you know what? I'm going to try and go back to sleep. My eyes are getting heavy and I feel like I'm ready. So I have my back, I guess, towards like the edge of the bed and I don't have a blanket on me because I'm like super hot. And I'm just like laying there and all of a sudden I feel what feels like something or someone touch my hip. And I'm like, okay, well I know it's not Tim because he's like, I'm facing him. So I know it's not him, but we also have like a million cats in this house. So I'm like, maybe it's one of our millions of cats. And so I reach my hand out. I still feel this pressure on my hip and nothing is there. No one is there. Not a cat, not a blanket, not a pillow,
a ghost,
not a child,
a Riker.
And it literally kind of gave me this like, yeah, maybe it was Riker.
No?
It kind of gave me this like really like uncomfortable. Like I started to get like, oh, okay. Well, I'm going to roll over on my side, face the edge of the bed, and get out my phone again and turn on my light to make sure nothing is there. Nothing was there.
Except for ghosts, but that might have happened when I was awake, but I was laying down in my room.
Wow. Yeah, I saw you this morning on your Kindle at like 3 in the morning when your dad got up from work.
You saw my Kindle just laying there?
It was on.
Wait,
what?
Wait,
Mom,
not
yeah, so that was my creepy story that I had to share with you. Sorry, I'm making juice because the child is thirsty and apparently will not drink anything else.
Okay.
Riker,
so we just returned from an Airbnb that we were practicing safe social distancing practices. Airbnb, which was in the mountains, so we literally stayed at the Airbnb and played in the snow. So no judgment. But anyway, this Airbnb, and this is common for Airbnb, so I'm not like overreacting, but the Airbnb had it had a bathroom in the master, it had a bathroom and it had a closet, but it also had a door that was probably to another closet or like a storage area that was locked that you don't have access to.
Oh.
And again, that's a common thing for Airbnbs because I've stayed like in a few, right? And so down below, there was also another room that was locked. Okay. So, I don't know.
Okay.
It's probably just another storage room. But, like, the one downstairs, I was like, okay, this makes sense. It's probably, like, an extra closet. It's just an extra storage one. But the one in the master bedroom creeped me out a little bit because I'm kind of like, what's in the bedroom? Is there like someone in here just watching us? I don't know. That one kind of gave me like a weird vibe. Yeah. So every night at 3:30, I would wake up and could not go back to sleep. Like just could not go back to sleep. And the first night I heard like my one daughter, and she does sleep walk and sleep talk, but I literally like, I heard a dog, not sound like a dog barking from outside. It sounded like a dog barking from inside. And we didn't take our dog with us, but it sounded like a roof, roof, and then stop. And then I heard my daughter go, Mom, Grandma, and then stop. And then I thought I heard other talking, and then it just went away. And then the next night, I literally felt someone tap me on my temple. Like if someone was tapping on me to see if I was awake or asleep. And it woke me up, but it was like, I didn't want to move because I was like, did that literally just happen?
Right. That's creepy. That's, it's, so it is like, don't make fun of me. Riker's like, because I'm like, not forming my thoughts right now. Stop it. Go. Sorry, this is why we took a break. So that's definitely creepy. I would be uncomfortable. But what's even creepier is I was just reading this thing, not last night in my sleeplessness, but like my last bout of sleeplessness last week. I read this thing and it was about Airbnbs and like people hiding cameras. And it wasn't like to make sure that their tenants weren't damaging the place. It was like creeper. Like they wanted to watch the people and what they did in Airbnb. So they like installed hidden cameras and all of this stuff. And the people were talking about how they like discovered them. And I was like, ew.
Well, I think you're supposed to like, aren't you supposed to touch the mirror? And if it's like a double pane where someone could see you on the other side, like, I don't know. There's something you're supposed to do, but then I can never. If it's a two-sided mirror, it'll do this, and if it's normal, then it will do this. But I can't remember what it's supposed to do and what it's not supposed to do, so that doesn't really help me.
Yeah, there's something like that, and then one of the things that like they pointed out in this article was, you know, like the Febreze air fresheners that you plug into the wall. It was like some. It was like they thought it was an air freshener, but it was really like a camera. And so they like found it, and they knew, like, they were like, this is really weird. Like, it doesn't look right. And it's just something about it seemed off to them. So they unplugged it so the person wasn't able to watch them. I think they had like found underneath like the heating vent, there was something attached to the heating vent. And then there was something else plugged in, and they were aware of the one by the vent, like it was like a we know what this is, weird, but they, you know, you can put a suitcase in front of that, you can block that very easily, but the other thing was plugged into the wall to look like an air freshener. You know, unplugging every air freshener.
Oh man.
Maybe I should have told you this before you went away.
Why are people like so weird?
Yeah, thank you. Weird. The mirror stayed, yeah.
Oh, is that like Oculus or something?
Probably.
It's torn completely back.
Okay,
it's
right. Thing.
The camera person zoomed in.
Okay, why don't you go drink your juice?
Go drink your juice.
Please just drink the juice.
Happy birthday of winter break.
Yay.
And too soon.
I will help you pack when I'm done.
Oh my gosh.
Vodka. I need vodka.
So yeah, this is our Christmas episode.
Merry Christmas to you, or whatever you celebrate.
Merry Christmas, Grandma. Or Merry Kaliki Laka.
Good job, buddy.
That's how you said Christmas.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
I think there is a Hawaii.
You think who's in Hawaii? The people who listen?
No.
Oh. We don't have anyone from Hawaii?
I was saying, because I think Auntie Allison is in Hawaii.
Auntie Allison's not in Hawaii. She's at her house.
But I wish I was in Hawaii. Thank you
Me
for
too.
Thinking I was in Hawaii.
Because I love Hawaii.
Yeah.
It's such a nice place.
It is a nice place. We were lucky enough to go on a cruise to Hawaii 2 years ago. And I wish we didn't have a pandemic, and I wish we were on that cruise right sure. now. Except for the volcano erupted last night. So Riker's staring at me like, what? The volcano we went to erupted. All right. Well, yeah. So I guess that weird engine.
It's like always sunny.
Yeah, quiet, please.
So we hope you enjoyed this episode, and we hope you have a safe and healthy and happy holiday season.
Yes, and tune in next week for our year in review. Not year.
You just said urine.
Year in review, or the year in review, according to Riker.
Urine.
All right. Merry Christmas.
It just would be without a kid.
Merry Christmas.
Merry
Happy
Christmas.
Holidays.
Merry Christmas, Auntie Allison.
Merry
bye.
Christmas, Riker.
Everybody that's watching this.
No one watches it, they listen. I can't right now. Okay.
Bye.
Happy holidays. Bye.
Bye.